All before the all after, all child hater, all of my own.
PQRST! Hello, hello, and welcome to PQRST, parody, quips, rants, and storytelling. A thank you, as always, to Stitch for providing the opening alphabet song. It is kind of early in the morning on a Saturday. I usually have been trying to record the podcasts on Friday when I can, but my wife's parents were in town this week. Hello, Chris and Wilna. And they just kicked off to go back to California this morning, about an hour ago. And since they were here Friday, I figured better to spend time with them while I have the chance. And it was a treat having them in town. A lot of people, I mean, comics since the dawn of time have been making mother-in-law jokes, but I very much enjoy time with mom and dad on my wife's side. And it was also a treat having them in town this week because this was the week of the big show. And as far as the opening rant, I don't really have a rant. This week was just too much fun to rant about anything. I suppose the closest thing I can come to is that a rant about time itself, because, oh man, it's weird that a bad 5-minute stand-up comedy set can feel like an hour, and a great hour of comedy can feel like 5 minutes. Wednesday night was one of those felt-like-5-minutes moments, which tells you a little something about how it went. But 9 months of writing, the idea for the whole show, I feel God gave that to me last November, so almost a year of prep, and it's over. And in a flash, it was over, and I can only once recall during the hour of performing thinking, wow, this is going great, I should really enjoy this. And then I was back to, you know, just being in the moment, which I think I was fairly well. So that's the only thing that even approaches a rant today, is that time zips by when something really great is happening, and boy, it crawls like a snail when you're on stage bombing. At least I assume. I have to go back to, since I've never had anything thrown at me, I don't know what bombing is really like, but. So, the show. We had everything set up Wednesday night, or at least everything was supposed to be set up Wednesday night. That's one of the fun things about show business, is that nothing really ever goes exactly like you want. I arrived at the theater at 5 p.m., and had 5 cameras with me to record the show. We're going to make a video of it, and as soon as I have a good video of not only my performances, but that of the other 2 comics, I will post the links to those videos on the description to this podcast. So when you're done listening, don't go link there now. Hang on. When you're done listening, if you're like, wow, that sounds like fun, I want to see what the guys came up with, you can do so. Had 5 cameras with me and 5 tripods, and had figured out, you know, I had battery for the cameras, and I had recording ability for the cameras, and I had my props, because I use a couple of props in the show. Excuse me, the later part where I talk about Broadway. I have a couple Broadway props, which you can see if you watch the video. And I had my suits. My wife and I went to Macy's. We got me a suit. Last time I wore a suit was pretty much my wedding, and I actually made a joke about that when I came out to introduce the show. Said that the last time I wore a suit was my wedding, and the next time I wear a suit is when my currently unborn son gets married, so enjoy this while it lasts. And it's not really far from the truth. It's not that I'm uncomfortable in a suit. I don't know what it is, but I'm just a t-shirt and jeans guy, or this time of year, a shorts and t-shirt guy. So, you know, I save the suit wearing for very special occasions, and that way my wife can enjoy it when it happens and it doesn't become blasé. I had my suit with me, and I had the cameras, and walked into the theater at 5 o'clock, and the Lakewood Cultural Center Theater is fantastic. The theater itself is just tremendous. They put a lot of thought and effort into designing a great theater, and the crew and the staff at the Lakewood Cultural Center are also amazing and tremendous. I've gotten to work behind the scenes at the Lakewood Cultural Center many, many times. First time I walked into the building was so that I could film Fiesta Colorado Dance Company about a million years ago. And then I picked up Murphy Repertory Dance Company. Shout out to Lena Trin, who was the director of that company. And it was such a treat filming both those shows. And got enough work at the Lakewood Cultural Center that they started recommending me. So I picked up the Colorado Chorale and Missoula Children's Theater because the guys in the crew, Tim Hoffman especially, said, hey, we know a guy that does videos. Worked there enough just making videos that I actually was offered part-time employment for a couple years when they needed some help. I ran sound for Performance Now's productions of Oklahoma and Sound of Music and Colorado Christian University's Kiss Me Kate. I ran lights for a ballet company whose name I forget that had a thing going on. And I might as well tell this story now. I was on deck crew for several shows at the Lakewood Cultural Center. Again, another dance company, ballet company, forget which one. It might have been the Colorado Ballet, maybe. Somebody was doing the Velveteen Rabbit, and I was on deck crew. And my job was to, among other things, there was a scene where during blackout, a Christmas tree is pushed on stage, and the Velveteen Rabbit comes out from behind, the dancer, of course, comes out from behind the tree, dances around for a bit, goes back behind the tree, comes out without the Velveteen Rabbit suit. It's just the dancer in leotard at that point. And so my job during blackout was to push the tree to the center of the stage and then crouch behind it. And the dancer would come out from behind, she would get in position in front of me, come out from behind the tree, dance around, come back behind the tree. I would unzip the rabbit costume so she could slip out of it and dance some more. And all the time, this is 7-8 minutes that she's on stage, I'm just crouching behind this tree, not moving any more than absolutely necessary, because the audience is not supposed to know that there is a crew member crouching. Well, he would be in plain view if there wasn't a tree in front of him. And so that's a little behind-the-scenes look at show business. You never know when there's a crew member crouching behind a tree right on stage. That's one of my fun stage stories. The other one is David Taylor Dance Theater does the Nutcracker every year. And the Lakewood Cultural Center Theater, among many fun things that they have going on, they have the ability to hang a snowbag. So if you've ever seen White Christmas or certain versions of the Nutcracker, like the one David Taylor does, sometimes, just for fun, you see snow gently falling onto the stage. Well, the way that that's done is this long, narrow bag. It's like a tube, but it's a bag, is filled with whatever it is they use to make it look like snowfall. I don't think they do soap flakes anymore. They did in It's a Wonderful Life. I've heard that Jimmy Stewart complained about the snowflakes not tasting very good, the soap flakes, you know. But this bag, whatever it is that's in it, it's not food, and it's annoying to clean up. It's fluffy, maybe feathers, down, I don't know. They're little, they're white, they fall softly like snowflakes. Anyway, this bag is filled with those, and the bag has little openings, and there's a rope coming down off to one side of the stage, and you pull on that rope, and the bag gently, the openings open, hence the name, and snow falls gently to the ground. And I did my job for most of the shows, and snow gently fell at the end of the first act. And then for the very final performance, I got permission, I asked, because I don't like getting in trouble, and so I try to ask permission. I asked permission from the crew manager if I could do this, and he thought it was all right, because the more snow is left in the bag, the more has to be cleaned up. So they're like, yeah, get all the snow you can out of that bag. So when the time came to pull the rope and drop the snow, I rang that rope like Quasimodo on his bell. Man, I was pulling on that thing as hard as I could, and so it was a bit of a blizzard at the end of Act 1 onto the ballet dancers. And reportedly, everybody thought it was pretty cool, except possibly David Taylor himself. But, so that's another fun story from the Lakewood Cultural Center, telling all that to tell that I have had many experiences on that stage, behind that stage, and in the booth. So when the idea was inspired by the Holy Spirit to say, hey, what if you checked with the theater to see about putting on a show? The Lakewood Cultural Center was the first and only choice for me. If it had just been too expensive, if they could not provide a show date, there were a couple other possibilities, but they were the ones I wanted, clear favorite, hands down. And that's where we got to perform. And one more story. That's not the first time I've performed on that stage. I mentioned earlier the Murphy Repertory Dance Company. My sister, who grew up taking ballet, hello, Amanda, she, when I got Murphy Repertory as a client, she came to a show. I don't remember how exactly she met Lena, but she thought at some point that it would be fun to do hip-hop with the Murphy Repertory Company, and she did for a couple years. And one semester, maybe, the dance world seems to go in half-year cycles. So one of those six-month cycles, Amanda and I decided we'd do a hip-hop class together because, I love her and she loves me, and we thought we'd test our relationship by doing a dance class together. No, it was a ton of fun. And, of course, there was a performance, which I don't think I will link to in the podcast, because I don't have the rights to the choreography or the song. That's why. Not because I don't really want to share my hip-hop performance with the world. But we got to perform on that stage, do two different hip-hop numbers. One of them was to, I think it's the Black Eyed Peas, Where All the Ladies Gone. Behold a Lady. Behold a Lady. That was one of them. And the other was not. So I've been on that stage before. Was not a first for me. It was a first for comedians Jeff Cohn and French Accent, a.k.a. Russian Accent, a.k.a. Kevin Bennett. And it was fun to see them come into the theater and see the performance space, kind of see it through fresh eyes, because it is a wonderful, wonderful theater. Not huge, 310 seats, I think, but plenty big enough for our purposes. We had hoped to sell the theater out. That would have been nice. We did not sell out. We sold, at last count, I think it was 118 tickets. But that means that 118 people stopped what they were doing on Wednesday night, October 7th, 2015, and found their way to the theater, a couple of them all the way from California, so that they could see our show. That morning on Facebook, I posted a quote from some lyrics from Ryan Montbleau's Montbleau, M-O-N-T-B-L-E-A-U, one of Ryan Montbleau's songs, Stretch. And it's going to take microphones and stages, many people rearranging what their plans are for the nighttime. Hope they show up at the right time, and I'll sing them my song, and I hope they sing along. I know they always sing along in my imagination. Hopefully Ryan won't mind that I share a bit of his song. He's one of my favorite lyricists, performers. I love his stuff. And I posted that Wednesday morning because that's exactly what was going on, that 118 people stopped their lives so that they could come to the theater and sit in the dark for 2 hours and let us do our level best to entertain them. And we were so blessed to have all 118 beating hearts in the seats, and we had a great crowd. Would have been nice, yes, to sell out. Assuming a crowd is laughing, the more people are there, the more laughter there is, the better the show is. It just kind of feeds on itself. Though that is a double-edged sword. If you lose a crowd, losing 300 people is worse than losing 30. but we did not lose the crowd. The crowd was absolutely tremendous, and we had enough paying customers that we made back the money that we put into the show. Even made like a couple of bucks extra. And in addition to all that, we, all three of us, get to then have a professional video of the show. Though it was a close thing. one of the challenges, when I do comedy, I like to use my hands. And I had been practicing with the assumption that my hands would be free, that I could use a lapel mic taped up to my face, like performers often do when they are in plays. The Lakewood Cultural Center has 20-some mics, and I've worked shows like Oklahoma. There were times where better part of 20 mics were hot at the same time, you know, everybody on stage, and who's got this line and that line, and somebody runs off stage, and you got to pull their mic because they might go backstage and start talking, and if their mic is still up, that's weird for the people listening. But yeah, there was one mic up even when a person went to the bathroom. I don't know if I was running sound then. I just know that that happens too. We'll say I wasn't running sound then, although there's a chance I was. Remind me, I have another story about when I was running sound involving a gunshot sound effect. Anyway, we got the mic attached to my face, and we were doing mic check, and something was wrong. So we replaced the pack with another pack and tried again, and something was still wrong. And I think we even replaced for a third pack, and I hope they have time enough to figure out what the deal is before the next big show comes through, because something about the mics was not working that night. And so it's one of those things where a performer has to roll with it. I used a handheld mic just like the other two guys did, and that actually created a bit of a problem, a couple of difficulties. One was that, like I say, I had practiced hands-free, and I have a couple of bits that require both hands, like where I'm Pa Kent spanking toddler Superman for a brief moment. And, you know, there's a stand there, and the mic fitted onto the stand very nicely. I didn't have to fight with it, but it was a bit awkward and may come across on the video that I want things to be polished. I want to look like I know what I'm doing, like not professional. I want to look to provide a professional level show. So that's why I had practiced up stuff. I've been running the entire show once a day for at least 5 days a week for better part of a month, maybe a month and a half, because I want this to be polished. I want it to look, you know, professional. And so switching at the last minute to having a mic on a stand, I rolled with it. Wasn't quite as smooth as I would have liked. But the other thing is, three times during the performance, I'm sitting and playing a piano and singing into the microphone. And I would have much preferred having the lapel mic on my head, because after years and years and years of doing praise and worship on Sunday mornings, having a mic that I have to lean into and remember to stay leaned into it, I don't know, I move around a bit when I play, and I might lean forward, lean back, and suddenly I'm too close to the mic, or I'm too far away, and to concentrate on staying within 2 to 3 inches of a microphone takes some of the concentration away from the playing and singing that I'm doing. And playing and singing is difficult enough without having to also remember there's a microphone I'm supposed to be within 3 inches of, he said, ending his sentence with a preposition. So, again, there was a challenge, and a further, this was something I wish now I had thought about for 10 seconds. The plan was, we have red curtains closed, leaving about 10 feet in front of that of stage. And I come out between the red curtains, I introduce the show, and warm up the crowd for a couple minutes, and then introduce Jeff. Jeff comes on stage, I hand him the mic, I leave the stage, and he does his 20 minutes. He introduces Kevin Bennett, who comes on the stage. Jeff leaves the stage, Kevin does his 40 minutes. Then Kevin introduces me, walks off the stage, carrying the mic with him, mic and stand, if things had gone the way I had planned. And then the red curtains open to reveal the piano. An attempt at some showmanship, a surprise for the audience. I start singing off stage. You don't even see me, and walk on stage while singing, and then sit down at the piano, start playing. And all that did happen, but the way the logistics worked out, since I'm starting to sing off stage, I have a handheld mic waiting backstage with me, and there's also a second handheld mic that the other two comics have been using on stage, and so there was no sense in having two, well, we ended up having two. So there was one at the piano and one at the front of the stage. And when I said, okay, it's time, I'm going to go sing something on the piano now, I left the one mic and then trotted over to the piano, and it would have been a much better transition to say the last line as I'm walking over to the piano instead of, okay, 1 second, and trot over to the piano in silence. That dead air thing is not much fun. I don't think it hurt the show. It just looks a little weird, and it may end up looking a little weird on the video, and I want things to be perfect and have to accept that I can't have things perfect, at least not as far as I know. But if I'd thought about it for 10 seconds, I could have asked Kevin to take the handheld mic with him, just leaving the stand, and then had one mic that stayed with me throughout the performance. But by the time we realized it was going to have to be a handheld mic, we had another problem, and it was getting closer to opening the house, and so I just needed to make a decision, and I did. The other problem, I obviously couldn't run the cameras from the booth while I was on stage, and as much as I hate asking other people for help, I had brought in one of my freelancers. I make videos for a living, as I've mentioned earlier, and sometimes there are more than one performance at a time, like this coming December 10th, when I have five on the same night at five different elementary schools. And so other people work for me. I hire freelancers, I pay them, they film, and then I take care of the editing and distribution. And so I had asked one of my best freelancers, Lindsay Calvert, if she could come and take care of running the cameras from the booth. And she actually, I brought five cameras with me. Two of those cameras were not high def, and I was willing to deal with that, but she was able to actually bring two high def cameras with her, which meant that all five shots could be high definition, which is nice. That means that the YouTube videos for both the other comics and myself can be in high definition. But she hit some traffic, and she and I were both hoping she'd be there at about 6, just to take care of any questions or anything. I think it was about 6:45 or so when she finally made it, before a 7 o'clock show. Might have been a little earlier, but was later than we wanted. And so I didn't have a lot of time to think about microphones, because I needed to connect with her, and she had questions about the framing, and there was the question of, by the way, the highest setting we have for high def will only run for an hour and a half. When's intermission? And we weren't doing intermission. We ran the show straight through for 2 hours, because comedy seems to work better when you just keep the level up, keep the energy up. And, excuse me, taking an intermission means there's 10 minutes, 15 minutes where people can start thinking about the lives they have outside the show, and at best, you still have to kind of get them back. You have to build them up again when the intermission finishes, when the second act of the show starts. At worst, some people might leave. There were people who, you know, if somebody is like, okay, this isn't as funny as I thought, or okay, I really have work to do tomorrow, whatever. Some people might not come back from intermission. And speaking for myself, I wanted everybody there. If I want to make people laugh, and I do, I'd like the chance to make as many people laugh as we can get. So we didn't do an intermission, and the cameras are going to roll for an hour and a half, and then need to be the recording medium needs to be swapped out, another memory card or whatever. And that was something we had to take a couple minutes when we didn't have a couple minutes and figure out. And we figured it out, and all went well there. But the 2 hours we had between showing up at the theater and the downbeat, as it were, to the start of the show passed a lot more quickly than I thought. And there was not, I didn't have time to go out and say hi to my wife and her parents when they showed up. As I recall, she came back to say hi to me before the show, which was nice because I love her. But it was a bit scrambly. It was a bit crazy. And show business is a bit scrambly and a bit crazy. So, you know, it happens. I've mentioned their names, but definitely want to thank Jeff Cohn and Kevin Bennett. And if you look for Jeff Cohn, that's K-O-E-H-N. If you Google his name, you can find him on Facebook and YouTube. And also again, once I have a video and his permission, I will link to the description of this podcast. You can see the comedy that he did this past Wednesday night at Give My Regrets to Broadway. And also many thanks to Kevin Bennett, also known as French Accent. And you can look for French Accent on YouTube, I believe, or click on the link that will be found in the description for this podcast to see the set that he did. And the guys did a very professional job. When Tim, who was on the lights, was also acting as our stage manager because he was fantastic. And we also had Michelle running sound, and Michelle running sound did a great job. I did not catch her last name, but her first name was Michelle. And Kelly Graham was the coordinator for the show and answered all my thousands of dumb questions because I had never produced a show at a big theater before. And she was very patient with me. Everybody was great. The ushers were great. The box office ladies were great. The crew and workers is not the word I want, but employees, everybody involved with the show was very professional and absolutely wonderful. Anyway, Tim, who was the stage manager as well as running lights, we got started within 2 to 3 minutes of 7 o'clock, which was fun. We did not have to wait while I wouldn't have minded waiting because a bunch of people showed up and were still buying tickets. But anyway, we got to start on time, and I do like that. And so he gave us 15 minutes and 10 minutes and 5 minutes, and then I got in position behind the curtains, and we heard the signal that I was waiting for was the official announcement. Welcome to the Lakewood Cultural Center. As a courtesy to the performers, please silence your cell phones, and if you have a screaming child, put something in his or her mouth. I made that last part up. But anyway, that was the cue that after this, it is showtime, and I fumbled my way through the curtains and came out to see the crowd. And first impression, if I'm honest, it seemed like the room wasn't very full. I saw a lot of empty seats. And that is, please, to not take away, I say that, I don't mean to take away from the 118 people that showed up. Thank you so much for being there. And I know a lot more people wanted to come, but there were Bible studies, there was sickness, there was being out of town, a lot of... Wednesday night apparently is not the best night of the week to do comedy, although if we'd done Thursday night, we would have been competing with football, and that might not have helped either. My church, I think a couple people would have come that know me, at least one of my pastors, there was a church retreat, and of course it was this week, so... anyway, the first impression was, oh man, so many empty seats. And, you know, I'm being honest with this podcast, and that doesn't sound great, but that was the first thought I had. However, if only one person had been there, if it was just my wife and her parents and nobody else, we still would have had a show, and I still would have done my best to make them laugh. So, you know, I noticed empty seats, and then I put that out of my mind. And I started into my opening bit, which, why not? I'll link that in the podcast as well. And the first thing I said, whatever it was, got a laugh. And at that moment, I was like, okay, we are going to have a good show. Because, not because, hey, I really am amazing. Not that at all. It was, this is a great crowd. And I will take a great crowd of 10 people over a lackluster crowd of 100 or 1,000 or 10,000. It's such a difference for a show. Granted, if you're making a recording, 100 people laughing is a lot better for the recording than 10 people laughing. But 10 people laughing is a lot better than 100 people just kind of sitting there. So, but this was, it was a great crowd. I did... To open up, you know, just thanked everybody for being there, and you know, a joke or two, and then kicked into my Disney GPS bit, which I figured would be a good warm up for the crowd. It's 2, maybe 3 minutes long, and I do my Mickey Mouse impression and a Goofy impression, and just, you know, a couple jokes that if Disney had created a GPS device, what might that say? And you can click on the link if you would like to hear how that went. And the crowd enjoyed it. and got some great laughs, and this was a fun moment. The last joke I do in the Disney GPS is a parody of Let It Go from Frozen. And so I said, yeah, so the last setting on the Disney GPS was Frozen. And maybe a third of the crowd was like, ah, which was wonderful. Because they're as sick of that song as I am. And I was like, yeah, I know, brace yourselves. And then I sang the parody. And the fact that they are sick of that song, I think, makes the parody even funnier. If it's a song you love and the person is parodying it, that maybe, I like that. I enjoy Weird Al very, very much. And, you know, it's like, oh, he's got a parody of Happy by Pharrell Williams. Oh, fantastic. But some people are like, oh, he did a parody of Happy? I like that song. And there was one moment later on in my actual set where I go to make fun of Brown Eyed Girl. And I distinctly heard somebody all the way in the back row after I made the joke said, but I like that song. So... it doesn't work for everybody, but when it's a song that people are sick of, that usually hits pretty well, and this did. So they're warmed up, and I turned them over to Jeff. And one of the things I want to thank both Jeff and Kevin for is their professionalism. They were both on time for the show, Kevin especially so. He was there at 5 and a big help to me in getting cameras set up and helping where the things that we needed. And Jeff, too, he was there by 6:30, plenty of time. They're both professionals, and I appreciate that, having had to track down comics at shows in the past. They also hit their time. Once I introduced Jeff, I walked off stage and started the stopwatch on my phone, walked up into the booth, and just enjoyed his set. So the stopwatch is running, and I have a flashlight ready to put up and wave my hand in front of so that he can see that he... he's only got a minute left, but he wrapped things up at about 19 minutes out of the possible 20. I was just getting ready to flash him, and he did his last impression and turned things over to Kevin. And I reset the stopwatch and started it up again as Kevin began. And when Jeff got up to the booth, I handed him the flashlight and the stopwatch, and I went down to pace back and forth and wait for 40 minutes to elapse. And Kevin also was very professional. I think I was backstage, so I don't know. I'm pretty sure Jeff probably had to give him the light, but Kevin did not say, oh, okay, they're giving me the light, that means I have another minute, or something to that effect, which is not terribly professional to say, unless it's something you work into a joke. Calling the audience's attention to the fact that they're watching a show, you know, breaking the fourth wall can be very effective, but it needs to be done well. And just saying, oh, I see the light, I've got a minute left, that's not doing it well. Kevin didn't say a word about getting the light. He just did another minute and then closed his set. And he hit right around 40, which was the time he was allotted. So it's great working with people who can be professional like that. The show that... Stand Up and Deliver, we called the show that ran at the Bovine Metropolis Theater for 2 years. Ran once a month for 2 years, and we would have 7 to 10 comics every time we did that show. And most of them were fine. A lot of the comics in that show were kind of new to comedy, had just started writing, and so most of the time we didn't need to give the light to people because they would... thank you, I'm done, before their time was up. But there was at least one comic, I recall, who... I'm not sure if he just didn't get it. You know, there's this light flashing at me. That's odd. Or if he didn't care. But we flashed the light. That was a show that, while I was there and I was one of the performers, someone else was hosting. And the host would have the job of flashing the performers. And so the host gave him the light, and he kept going. And a minute or two later, the host gave him the light again, and this comic kept going. And about 2 minutes after that, the Jessie Hansen, who is a fine comic herself, who was running sound that night, actually spoke up from the booth and said, "And that was," and gave the comedian's name that I will not give here, because, you know, no sense in being specific. Sometimes things happen. and that was, you know, this comic, thank you. And so she had to actually go to that length so that the comic could get the idea of, oh, I'm supposed to get off stage now. And no problems like that with Jeff or Kevin, which I did not expect to have. They both are pros, and it's fun to work with pros that treat things in a professional manner. So Kevin, and I've been pacing back and forth and trying to listen to Kevin's set and occasionally walking into the green room to look at the clock because I don't have my phone on me. I don't know what time it is. And I don't know what Kevin's last bit is going to be. And so I didn't want to, as somebody had to do once on a show I was running, at, that I was running sound for. I don't even, it might have been Oklahoma. Anything goes, I don't know. But I was running a show at LCC, and one of the performances, it was somebody's cue. And that particular somebody was, at the time, hanging out in the green room just talking to his fellow performers, not having realized that the scene had started. And so the guy on stage had to vamp for about 30 seconds, which, it's one thing for improv performers to do that, maybe even a stand-up person, but for a performer who has a script that they're following to have to do improv for 30 seconds, yeah, that's a bad moment. Until the guy who had missed his cue twice at that point was informed that he was supposed to be on stage and could run on stage. I did not want to be that guy to Kevin, so I was pacing around just behind the curtain where I could hear him, and if he was like, okay, that's my time, I'm done, and walk off, you know, in 5 seconds, I was ready to jump on. Anyway, he does his time, and he steps off stage, and the curtains open, and I start singing. And what felt like about 5 minutes later, I'm wrapping things up. Because, as I said before, we had a wonderful crowd who wanted to laugh. They were ready to have fun, and we had a great great time. And it's such an amazing feeling. It's one thing to be at a party and, you know, there's 10 people in the room and, you know, to come up with a joke on the spot and everybody laughs. And that's a wonderful feeling. It's the same, only much, much more so, to walk out on stage and tell a joke that, instead of being in the moment, which has its own magic, that you have written and rewritten and tested and tried and has a very specific timing and pace that's completely prepared. And an audience loves it. An audience really laughs. And there were... nobody hits with every joke. At least I don't... There are guys that are working at a far higher level than I am. But even then, you know, some jokes work, some jokes don't. Depending on the crowd, depending on the temperature in the room, depending on whether a cell phone just rang, which happened twice. if you watch the video, you'll hear it. And the first time, I was like, oh, hey, so somebody's phone. And I think I made a joke out of it. And the person pulled their phone out and I think was trying to turn it off. But it rang again about a minute later. And the joke that I was telling as it rang completely fell flat. And I don't know if it was because the phone went off or because the joke wasn't funny. But sometimes these things happen. And if that's the worst heckle I had, the unintentional sound from the crowd heckle, could have been a lot worse. And, you know, that's comedy for you. But I was saying that just things happen. And maybe even the best comics, not every joke lands. And sometimes even the best comics, the whole set doesn't land for whatever reason. I liken it to flying a kite. It's a fairly simple exercise on paper, but the wind has to be right, not too heavy, not too soft. The kite has to be well made, not too heavy, not too light. A lot of things have to line up for a kite to stay in the air. And a lot of things have to line up for a joke to really land with a crowd. And when it does, it is such a wonderful feeling. Especially the jokes where, and there were, I don't know, a dozen moments, I think, during the hour, maybe more. I haven't counted, and I was a little busy at the time. But there were plenty of moments where I was ready with the next joke, but I had to wait until the audience was done laughing. And that is just, I don't know any drug. Well, my drug experience is extremely limited, pretty much just Tylenol and one hit of oxycodone when I almost broke my arm. But I can't imagine a drug that would be any better than that. And it has some aspects of drug use, because I'm already ready for my next hit. I want to make people laugh again. I would not call myself addicted to it, because if for whatever reason I had to stop doing comedy today, I could let it go and remember fondly this past Wednesday night. But I'm ready for more, and I'm excited for more. And that's one of the things that was so great about having a great crowd and having cameras there, is because I now have an hour of comedy that I can show to churches, nonprofit organizations. I have no idea where I'll even go looking, but when opportunities arise and someone says, all right, show me what you can do, I can show them what I can do. And if I'm playing at a level that they would agree is the level they want to see, maybe I can get opportunities to make people laugh. Because since I started writing comedy, I've done open mics, I've done the Comedy Works New Talent Nights and Clean Contest once, and the New Faces contests, and I've three different times produced a show. The Grounds and Giggles that was at Solid Grounds Coffee Shop for two performances, Stand Up and Deliver that was at Bovine Metropolis for 2 years, and now Give My Regrets to Broadway that was at the theater this past Wednesday. Besides that, I have not had many opportunities where I've been invited to come tell jokes. I have had a couple, and I may talk more about that another week, because we're already almost 45 minutes into this podcast. But by far, the opportunities that I've had are ones where I have gone out and said, hey, can I get stage time? Either because it's an open mic, or because I have created a show to be on. And I really want to be invited. I want churches to say, wow, this guy's funny. Let's have him come, you know, tell jokes for our volunteer banquet. This guy's funny. Let's have him MC our talent show. That is my desire. And the thing is, just because that's my desire doesn't mean that's what God wants to do with this. And it's probably yet another topic for another week. But the short version is, everything in my life belongs to him. My marriage, my quote-unquote possessions, as though I have anything I can really call mine, everything, including my next breath, comes from him. It was nice of him to give me one. I hope he will continue to do so. But seriously, if God decided not to give me my next breath, there's nothing I could do about it. Everything I have is his, and everything everyone has is his, but I have humbled myself to acknowledge that fact, or I try to. So this comedy thing, which is very important to me, I'm very passionate about this, and I want to succeed in the ways that I've come up with that would define success. This is his, and he has a plan. I do believe that God is pleased when I do comedy and has something in mind, but I don't know what's next. It could be something I never thought of, which is kind of how it works with God. It also could be something I would not have asked for, and I have to submit myself that if what he wants is something I would not, if it's what he wants, then it's what's best, and it is what I want. But it's a very exciting time, because, like I said, the Holy Spirit last November said, you know, kind of tweaked me in the ear and said, what if you checked with Lakewood Cultural Center, see what it would take to put on a show? And that's what this past year has been about, and now it's over. And I have a video to put together and a DVD to make. And after that, I don't know what's next. And that's a little scary, because I want to know what's next. I'm a control freak. I like having plans. I make lists and lists and lists of the lists. I want to know what's next, and I don't. But I trust him. He has always proven himself trustworthy. And so rather than being worried that I've missed something, or trying to get out ahead of him and say, well, I'm going to go do this, and trust that you'll bless it. I don't think that's the best way to proceed, because things work a lot better when I let him tell me what he wants next, and then go do that. So, little deep, I guess, for a podcast, but these are the things I think about and the things that I believe, and I appreciate very much that you've listened. I could probably come up with another 10 moments from Wednesday night, but it was a great, great night. I feel I had a very good set, and I know that I kept the audience for an hour, and I did not know when I walked out on stage at 8:03 to start telling jokes whether or not I could do that. I had kept an audience for 25 minutes twice previously, and for shorter times before that, I didn't know if I could keep an hour, but I did, and I'm proud of myself for that, and thankful that we got to put this show on. So, that, I think, is about it, because it's been 47 minutes, and you have been very patient and kind to listen to me go on today, and I will bless you now, hopefully it will be a blessing, with a parody song. When that guy says your money will double if you just trust him implicitly, keep your wallet in your pocket, let it be. 'Cause there's no free lunch in this world, brother, his sure thing is no guarantee. Put that money into savings, let it be. Let it be, let it be, let it be, yeah, let it be. You'll love that compound interest, let it be. When you wake up to the sound of mewling and look outside your tent to see the cutest little bear cub, let it be. For sure his mama's out there somewhere, ready for some dumb white meat. Don't feed that cub no bacon, let it be. Let it be, let it be, let it be, yeah, let it be. Just take an iPhone picture, let it be. Let it be, yeah, let it be. Just post your iPhone picture, let it be. When you find your wife silent, when you find your wife silent and fuming, you forgot your anniversary. As you love your gonads, brother, let her be. You'll need the flowers and cards and gifts, something with diamonds preferably. But until she has calmed down, let her be. Let her be, let her be, let her be, yeah, let her be. You'll love that compound interest, just post on Facebook your picture. She'll calm down someday, till then, let her be. And that's my version of Let It Be in all its unrehearsed glory. Thank you so much for listening to today's podcast. Appreciate you. Links are up in the podcast description for the videos that I talked about. Once more, thank you to Jeff Cohn and Kevin Bennett and Tim Hoffman and Kelly Graham and Michelle on Sound for making it a fantastic show. And thank you to you for being so wonderful. I hope you know how much you matter. Own your stage this week, and I will see you in about 7.